This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio here in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, we are coming up to the 4th of July weekend, and I have two authors today that I tell you, you just will want to run out and get their books because you have some fantastic reading to do over the long weekend. At the bottom of the hour, my guest is John Gilstrap, and we are going to be talking about the 11th in his wonderful series of Jonathan Graves series. It's one of my favorites. But first, I am turning to somebody who, well, I think he is... Really, you know, I've talked to a lot of lawyers who have turned into authors, and here we have an example of an absolutely fantastic lawyer who has really quite a fascinating background. And so I'm very happy to welcome to the program. When I'm talking to authors, I always say, you know, I just hope that, you know, when you are on this program, that you will remember me, because when I like an author, I get so excited about it. And so today I'm talking to Robert McCaw. I almost said McGraw. It's really hard. Robert, Bob, are you there?
I'm here.
I hope you don't get that. People saying McGraw instead of McCaw, because it's an unusual name. And once we get it in our heads, and we know that at some point, you know, this is your second novel, right?
That's my second one.
Second one, and it's called Off the Grid. And McCaw is going to become a famous name because, you know, as I'm reading this book, I'm thinking of your main character, who is Detective Kowakane. Did I pronounce that right? Is it Kowakane? Hello? Oh, no. Are we having gremlins again? This is so funny. We're on live radio, but I want to talk to... We will try to get him back because this is really a wonderful, wonderful book. And it's Off the Grid, and he's calling back. Did we get him? Let's start. Let's keep going. Okay. Bob, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Somehow we had a little glitch there, but I'll reintroduce you. I am talking to Robert McCaw about his wonderful new book called Off the Grid. Bob, you know, as I'm reading this book, as one image kept coming to mind, because you are a lawyer, and quite a few authors that I've spoken to over the years are lawyers, but the one lawyer whose work that yours reminds me of is David Baldacci. You know, he was a lawyer, and like you, you know, had a career in law, but all the time he was thinking of writing, and of course we know what happened with him. And so now he's so famous, everybody knows his name. And I predict that people are going to know your name, because Robert McCaw you are really destined for an absolutely great career here as a writing about a detective that, when I was reading him, the reason I thought of Baldacci was your detective is called, his name is Detective Kowakane. I pronounce that right, Kane?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, Kowakane is, he reminded me, as I said, of Amos Decker, Baldacci's famous character. And there's just something about him, the same, just a style in your writing that captured me. So I was really excited to, you know, have this book just before 4th of July, because people are looking for books that they want to take, you know, to the beach with them when they go away to the cabin for the weekend. And speaking of cabins, this is a perfect book for somebody going away to a cabin. And you can tell us a little bit about that. But it is set in Hawaii. And it's so fascinating. And I learned so much about Hawaii just from your writing.
Well, you know, one of the things that I tried to do in the book is to make the setting a character. And I do that through, obviously, Kaupāni. But there's a lot of Hawaiian history and a lot of Hawaiian culture in the book. There's some Hawaiian language, although I translated for you. And I've tried to make him kind of the voice of Hawaii for the reader in the book, as well as an interesting and creative detective with a very unique history.
Very unique. And as I said, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed about the book was the Hawaiian aspect. There were so many things that I learned here that I had never really appreciated about Hawaii, and also the police procedural side of it. We always read about policemen and how difficult it is for them to do their work. They suffer a lot of trauma themselves from the stuff that they have to see. But this book really makes us feel for, I think anybody reads this book, you will always afterwards feel for the policemen and for what they do.
Well, you know, Ekoa has a unique history because as a teenager, he let his passions get ahead of him. And after his father was killed in an accident, which he discovered to be a crime, he sought out the perpetrator. And although I think he didn't intend to kill him, he ultimately did wind up in a fight and kill the man. And he managed to keep that a secret. And so he goes through life with this burden of guilt and this burden of remorse. But at the same time, he fooled the police and got away with the crime. And that makes him inherently suspicious of everyone and terrified that at any given crime scene, he's going to get fooled. He's going to get deceived by the perpetrator. And so he has this very suspicious, very guilt-ridden approach to investigating crime.
Which makes him a really good detective.
Well, that's one of the other things that's fun about it. My legal practice involved a lot of investigation. I represented both civil and criminal defendants. I saw a lot of different prosecutors. I worked with some of them. I worked against some of them. And I have a bag of tricks that I saw over the years. And it's really wonderful as a writer of police stories and murder mysteries to incorporate some of those tricks that I learned over the years that prosecutors use. And occasionally that defense counsel use in police investigations and in pursuing criminals. So that's another aspect of my bringing my own history in a little bit. And there's a little of me in Kaupāni. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
And your love for Hawaii has really, it's given you such depth so that when you're writing this story, we feel not only that you love Hawaii, but that you really want to do justice to the people.
Well, you know, there are, in many ways, there are two Hawaiis. There's a tourist Hawaii, which is largely the result of an advertising campaign. And like all advertising campaigns, it's got some license was taken with Hawaiian history. The real history of the islands is very complicated. It's fascinating, ranging from the very first Polynesians who discovered this set of islands that is 2,000 miles from anywhere, to the very unique way in which it became part of the United States. I mean, it was expropriated. It was a kingdom for over 100 years, recognized by the United States and others before the United States expropriated it. And so you have all of these different currents. That plus the fact that because of the sugar and pineapple operations there, people were brought to Hawaii from all over the world. So it's a very unique population of Japanese and Chinese and Philippines. And then they brought the people in from Portugal and Spain to be cowboys and to be engineers. And so you have this wonderful mix of people, which mirrors a little bit my own history, because I grew up in a military family and lived all over the world. And so there was something very attractive about this conglomeration of interesting people and characters.
And, of course, as I said, you obviously did a lot of research over the years into the history of Hawaii, because you blend it so beautifully in the story. And this, most of the story takes place in and around the volcano area. Tell us about that, and what you don't, you didn't buy one of those houses there, did you? next to a volcano. I hope you're not one of those investors, because it was so, you know, when the volcano, the most recent one, tell us about the houses there, and tell us about your involvement in that area.
Well, I've been going to Hawaii for over 20 years, and on almost every trip, I go to Hawaii Volcanoes National Park, because it's such an interesting place, and there are so many different things to see. But just outside the park in the 1960s, developers took about 1,800 acres of just completely desolate volcanic country and turned it into 1-acre lots with no water, no sewer, no nothing, and sold it to the unsuspecting public for $1,000 a lot. People built about 60 houses there. The land was advertised as next to the, quote, spectacular attractions, end quote, of Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. Well, the buyers got their spectacular attractions just a little bit to the uphill side, or the Mauka side, as the Hawaiians would say. There was a volcanic eruption that sent lava through the streets of this 60-house subdivision. And over the course of almost 30 years, 35 years, the lava destroyed every house there. And now you see stop signs sticking out of rock. You see there's a refrigerator that's frozen shut in the lava. It was the perfect place. I mean, I was there and I imagined it. It was the perfect place for someone to hide a body.
And I tell you, that scene in your book is one of the most grisly that I have ever read, but absolutely fascinating. And you do it so well. You know, it's difficult for me when I have a book like Off the Grid. There are so many twists and turns in it, and I almost like don't want to give away the story. I wish people would just pick it up and start reading it. This is a complicated story, and it has so many surprises. I don't know how much you want to say about it. It's not just a local murder. That's the beautiful thing about it. It starts off, you think there's a local murder. It's going to be a local story. And it expands so enormously into an international story, and it almost took my breath away. At points, I was like holding my breath as I'm reading. I'm saying, "Boy, he's putting another layer of excitement in this book."
Well, that was one of the great fun parts of writing it. I mean, you start off with these two murder victims on the big island. You don't know who they are. They're loners living way off the grid in the rainforest. And gradually, sort of, it's like peeling an onion. You learn a little bit about one of them and then a little bit about the other one, and then more and more and more until the U.S. government gets involved. The CIA shows up, and other elements of the government show up. And suddenly, Koa, who's had some experience in the real world because he was a soldier, was a Special Forces officer, he is confronted with an international problem. And I'm not going to tell you.
Don't.
I'm not going to be a spoiler.
I don't want to be a spoiler because people just. It's so much fun. As I never read the back, for example. I never read the back of a book. I never read any of that stuff because I love that reveal. I mean, the author works very hard to write the reveal, to get to people, you know, turning the pages and wanting to know what's happening next. And sometimes they give away too much in these, blurbs and all of that. And even on Amazon, one time I got really angry because they gave away almost the whole story. And I thought, well, why am I reading this book? But that's why I don't like to say everything that's going to happen, because I will tell you, you do it so... It's like one step leads to the next step, and we can almost imagine you as you're writing and saying, "Whoa, I have another idea here, and I'm going to, just get it in there."
Well, it's interesting because the end part of the book, the international episode that you're talking about, was one that I was fascinated by completely separately from the book, and I read everything I could about it. And the more I read, the more I thought, we don't really know the story of what happened here. It's just not comprehensible the way any of the stories have come out. And so this is an alternative version of history. Maybe it's true. I doubt it, but it's possible.
Quite a number of authors have actually stumbled onto the truth about an event. And in this case, it's so believable. I'm ready to say you had some inside information here but what I love is all the characters around Koa. You have a nice array of characters, all interesting, and as you're writing, we learn a little more about them as we go along. And I thought, I just enjoy your writing. Your style is very comfortable and just top quality writing, like Baldacci. And it's just, your story just flows beautifully.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for that's really high praise coming from you, and I appreciate it. But for me, it's a labor of love. I not only enjoy writing it, but I also enjoy editing it, polishing it, and trying to make it as good as it can be, or at least as good as I can make it. And I do that for the readers, because I read a lot of books, I read a lot of fiction, and I really appreciate it when the author goes and takes the time to create a really believable story with interesting characters. It offered me a new perspective on the world, and that's what I tried to do.
Well, you've done it, and I just want you to tell people a little bit about yourself, because I have discovered, as I've been doing this program now a little over 4 years, that one of the ways that an author gets a name, is by people knowing a little bit about their background. Now, we know you're a lawyer. And I want to repeat the name because it's an unusual name, but once people get it, McCaw,
McCaw. Bob McCaw.
You know, it's an easy name to remember once you've seen it a couple of times. And tell us about As you said, you were a military brat and traveled around the world a lot. But tell us a little bit about what it was like. You know, this is really exciting, and this is something I think the readers will like to know, that you clerked for a Supreme Court justice.
I did. Let me back up just a little bit and put a couple of pieces together. I grew up in a military family. I was a math major in college. I didn't want to go on in pure math. I kind of viewed it as never talking to another human being. And so I went into the military myself. I was an officer. I went to, was assigned to Korea. And the camp commandant called me into his office, and he handed me this thick purple book. And he, that was the military code of justice. And he said, "I've just appointed you the prosecutor in a court-martial." And this was back in the days when the rules for this kind of court-martial were that the defense counsel had to have at least as much legal training as the prosecutor. Well, I had no legal training at that point. I prosecuted the case. I prosecuted it against a member of the Pennsylvania Bar. He made motions that I, quite frankly, didn't understand at the time. I lost most of the motions, but I convinced the court that the man was guilty, which he was, and he got the maximum sentence. And that's the story of how I got to law school. I looked at this experience, and I said, I want more of it. And so I went to law school. After law school, I was fortunate enough to be able to clerk for one of the legal giants of our jurisprudence, Justice Black. It was a great experience to sit at the foot of one of the branches of government and see how it operated, see how it interacted with Congress, with the president, with all of the issues that come before the court. And there are many, many great stories about serving as a clerk during that period of time. The last case that we dealt with was, or that the judge dealt with, was the Pentagon Papers case. And so there was a great deal of excitement about the end of the term. Then I went on to practice and had a very interesting career for a long time before I retired and decided to become an author.
Well, I think you have, it, your life is just fascinating. I think your career as a writer is going to just blossom. This is the second book, and of course, the first book is Death of a Messenger, and people can go back to that, but this is a standalone, so you could just start right here, and I hope that everyone will get this for 4th of July weekend. It's called Off the Grid, and it's by Robert McCaw. Robert, your website is Robert B. McCaw, right?
That's right, robertbmccaw.com.
And also, I think, on Facebook, that's how they find you. And I suggest people go to Robert's website. It's Robert B. McCaw. He has an interesting story there about a black sand beach. I didn't know about how they were formed, and with his great in-depth knowledge of Hawaii, he has a really interesting story. And the book, all I want everybody to know, it's an international thriller, and they will enjoy it. And Robert, I want to, well, Bob, I want to thank you for being on the program today. It's been a joy to talk to you, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure to be here with you, and thank you very much for taking the time and reaching out to me to do this. Thank you.
Okay. Well, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial, and then I'll be right back with John Gilstrap.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and I'm so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, John Gilstrap. Hi, John.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, we are, you know, I've been so excited about this 11th in your Jonathan Graves series, and it's called Total Mayhem, which seems an appropriate title for any book you write. Wherever you are, there seems to be total mayhem. Wow, this new book is fantastic.
Thank you.
Whoa. But, you know, you have your calm moments in the book. I must tell people, most of the time, Jonathan seems to, you know, there's always, around Jonathan Graves, there's always things blowing up and things happening. But it is nice every once in a while to get just back to Fisherman's Cove, where everything is calm. And he can sit down and have breakfast. But boy,
that's right. Sit down, you know, finish his jog, have breakfast. The police chief,
relax for a few moments. But the rest of the time, this book is like it is nonstop mayhem.
Well, thank you. Well, that's the intention. I mean, the idea of this book. Actually, it comes from the D.C. sniper. I live in the Washington, D.C. area. And you remember back in, I think, 2000, 2001, there was a sniper that was going around and shooting people while they're pumping gas and that sort of thing. And it shut down the city. You're talking about one guy, you know, but millions of people were really concerned about going out of their homes because it was all over. It was Maryland, Virginia, D.C., everywhere he was shooting people. Ultimately, he was caught. And I thought at the time that, you know, that's really the ultimate act of terror because he really made millions of people change their schedules and the way they go about things. So I got the idea in Total Mayhem, terrorists are striking middle America, soft targets that everybody assumes are safe. You know, it's terrible, but we expect, you know, big targets in big cities to be targets for terrorism, but we don't expect high school football games and county administration buildings to be the targets. So but it turns out that one of the terrorists, they do catch one, knows Jonathan. It comes down to Jonathan to bring the network down.
Well, it always comes down to Jonathan. But
he is the star of the show.
And I do notice that, you know, he has, how can I say, the same initials as you, so he's your sort of alter ego. Okay.
You know, there's a story about that. I was probably four books into the series, and I think it was a radio interview I was doing when somebody asked me, you know, the two JGs. It had never occurred to me.
Uh-huh.
I like the syntax. I like the sound of Jonathan Graves.
I do, too. It's wonderful. But it's nice. I will tell you, it's nice that many of the characters have nicknames, and including Jonathan, who is called Digger, but because you have one character in there who we all love, anybody who reads your books loves, but his name is Brian Vandermeulenbroek.
Brian Vandermeulenbroek,
yeah,
is how it's pronounced.
Vander,
but he goes by Boxers.
That's right. Well, I think it's easier to call him Boxers. That's for sure. That's for sure.
There's no way I'm going to be typing that name.
Yeah,
I
was going to say, oh boy. Over and over, I can see you do that. So, but you have, and you have created a team around, you know, Jonathan that we all relate to. There's somebody in that team, I think, that everybody probably has their favorites. But so tell us a little bit about the team, and including, you know, you have one character whose name is spelled Venice, but it's pronounced Venice. So tell us a little bit about the characters, and then we'll get back to the total mayhem. But tell us about the characters, just so that people will see. You know, this is one of the things. This is the 11th book, and over the series, you've developed them, and we've gotten to know them and care about them. So tell us about them.
Sure. Well, Jonathan Grave is originally, he grew up as Jonathan Gravenow. And his father was a career criminal, and Jonathan changed the name because he was embarrassed by the name. But he grew up, his father was very wealthy because he was a very successful criminal, and Jonathan still has the money. And his mother died when he was very young. This is all backstory. And the surrogate mother who took care of him, Mama Alexander, her real name is Florence. And Mama had her own daughter, who was Venice. And she has a son named Roman. It's kind of this Italian thing that they have going. And when Venice, now Venice, was in high school, she just decided she wanted her name to sound more exotic, so she changed it to Venice.
I like it.
And Jonathan is very loyal, and Venice is quite the talented hacker. She's a computer whiz. She's Freakface 666 is her hacker name, and then there's Boxers and Jonathan served in the Army together in college at William & Mary, where I happen to have gone. Jonathan's roommate was a fellow named Dominic D'Angelo, who became a priest, and is now the pastor of St. Catherine's Catholic Church, which is also in Fisherman's Cove. And Jonathan is the benefactor of a place called Resurrection House, which is a home for the children of incarcerated parents. So Jonathan's really, he's a philanthropist, he's a good guy, he's a kind man, he's a generous man, and he's also a lethal man.
Oh, very lethal.
The rest of his team. Venice, not so much. She kind of runs things from back in the office.
But we must mention Gail.
Out of trouble. Oh, yes, thank you. And Gail Bonneville.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
I
know.
She's a little bit lethal herself.
Gail was introduced in the very first book. You don't have to read these books in order, but kind of neat to know the backstory, I guess. And in the very first book, very first scene of the first book.
I never forget that one.
A guy, Sampson, Indiana, and leaves some bodies behind. And the sheriff of Sampson, Indiana is Gail Bonneville. And she treats it as a homicide and tracks him down. And then ultimately stuff happens, and she joins the team. And she's kind of the conscience of the team. She's a former FBI agent. She's a former sheriff. She's a lawyer.
But nevertheless, we call her Gunslinger. So
her nickname is Gunslinger because she's very, very good.
Well, as I said, this is wonderful. As you've built up this whole family of characters. Of course, we all, I think everybody who reads you, and we go every book, we keep hoping that we're going to hear that it's been picked up, you know, because there are so many there's such a need for a really great series on one of the, you know, streaming video things nowadays.
Your lips to God's ear. Yeah, I absolutely agree.
I mean, really, you know, I think the only one that they've done really justice to is Bosch. You know, they took the Bosch books and they really did a great job with them. So I am hoping that somebody will really pick this up, because you've developed a team here, and your characters are so believable. And the stories, every story, you know, throughout the 11 books, it's been different. This one is a little bit different in the fact that it's here. It's more domestic than international.
Right.
So it has, you know, this aspect of it. But as I said, you always have this, I always feel, you know, if we need this moment when we're in Fisherman's Cove and we just can take this breather. But the rest of the time, things are blowing up around them, and it reminds me of one of the fascinating things about you, because I always tell people, you never know what's going to happen in your life. Always do everything that you can. Try this, try that, you know, volunteer for this, go there, learn how to play a tuba. You never know when you're going to use something. And so you didn't know when you volunteered for a fire department that that would change your life.
That's true. I mean, one thing after another, it all goes into, well, it changed my life certainly, because it shifted me to service for others, but it also exposed me to a lot of very interesting and frankly entertaining and also scary things.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, I'm a safety engineer by training and background in explosives and hazardous materials and radioactive materials and that kind of stuff. So, you know, all of it, it turns out that I spent years and years and years training to be a thriller writer and never knew it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all of this adds up. It's there. It's sort of in your DNA now, so that when you're writing, you want things to really get wild, you've got it. You know where to go and how to do it and the people to see if you need expertise, right?
Yeah, exactly. And people return my phone calls, which is always nice. I've because of the books and because of a nonfiction book I did back in the day, I have people return my phone calls. Nobody shares secrets with me. I don't want to know those, but I can call and say, you know, how would you do this, or is this feasible? What I'm proposing, and that's very helpful. But I want to emphasize also that I like to think, this is, you know, it's terrible. We end up talking about yourself on these things, and it always kind of makes you uncomfortable. But I think I write a thriller with a heart. I think that it's not action, action, action. That's certainly there. But what drives a story is the fact that I hope that people care about the characters who are in danger and are going to fix the problem, right?
Your books generally are around hostage rescue, mm-hmm. saving somebody's life or a group of people, and always, as you said, trying to do the right thing, trying to do it right and without hurting anybody but the bad guys. And so that,
right, John likes to say he's on the side of the angels.
Exactly, exactly. And we get that. I think we get that throughout the stories and the way each of the characters interact, that they all care about each other and they all care about the mission and making sure that they do the best they can and not cause, you know, damage to innocent people.
Right. They are not creating the total mayhem. It's the bad guys who are creating the total mayhem, right? So they're trying to bring peace and justice.
Exactly. Well, you know, when I met you at BoucherCon, it was so nice to meet you here in St. Petersburg. You know, I was thinking about one of the things that you do for authors. I had looked at some of your YouTube presentations where you're talking to authors, people who want to be authors, about how to approach writing. I know when you were at BoucherCon, I'm sure many people came up to you and said, you know, how do you do it? How do you start? And so I think that it's wonderful when an author is willing to go out there and you know, talk to people who are just dreaming about it and don't know exactly. They need that little push to say, yes, you know, I did it. I was doing something completely different, but I then became a writer, and it's simply a matter of making that determination to do it.
Yes, and also to get out of your head. I think one of the problems that many new writers, I'm not sure what the phrase is, unpublished writers, whatever, one of the problems is they think about the process too much. You know, people are, there's so much on the internet about you've got to do this and you got to do this. You know, you can't start with the weather, you can't have a prologue, you can't and none of that's true. You know, it's the idea is to tell the story. Just go out there and tell the story, and tell the story as if you were telling it to a friend. And develop that natural voice, because ultimately writing a book is telling a story. So it's character, plot, and setting. It's all wrapped up into one big knot. And I have found the reason I started the YouTube channel, Writer's View of Writing and Publishing, author John Gilstrap, is I realized when I do seminars and such that there's just no end of questions that people have, and I'm trying to create a resource where I anticipate the question. Well, I answer, you know, sometimes if a question comes up in the comment section or whatever, I'll do another video on that. But the idea is just to kind of get people to calm down and realize what the insider's view is, what the real life is, and then and encourage them to write.
Well, you are an expert really here at plotting. You really have I don't know if you outline or it's just seat of your pants type of thing, but your plots are very complex, and yet they flow one after another so seamlessly.
Why, thank you. I am not an outliner. I know I have a premise and, you know, a couple of important plot points along the way, but how the story advances is a voyage of discovery for me as I write.
And you know, over the years, I can't say that you're getting better because you were so great to start with, but last time, you know, with Scorpion Strike, I thought, well, this is like the unbelievable writing. But with the Total Mayhem, I found myself sort of sitting back and saying, whoa, This is brilliant.
Oh, wow.
I mean, because, you know, it's in thrillers, you don't expect everything, you know, to be, how can I say, it's not always brilliant writing. And so when I'm reading along and I'm saying, he is just bringing us into this story and taking us for this ride with his people, I thought, wow, I'm enjoying this so much, and I kept saying, I hope, you know, one of the things I love to when my husband gets excited about a book, and because he loves thrillers, and I said, well, I know this is just going to be one of those books that he won't put down, because he's very particular. If it doesn't grab him, if it doesn't move, he'll put it down after a chapter, max. That's it. He won't even think about it. But I know that with your books, it's just he can't stop reading them.
Well, that's wonderful. I got to tell you, if not to pat myself on the back, if you can put down Total Mayhem after the first chapter, you're just not paying attention.
That's true. I mean, I loved when you wrote about Tom Darone. And I'm so interested in this, you know, what he does here in this first chapter. It is a absolutely fantastic first chapter. And after that, people are just going to be sitting back and saying, oh, give me another beer. I'm going through this book. This is going to be my 4th of July treat for myself.
Well, and I think, you know, and thank you for all of that. What I really try hard to do is to create a sense. This is where the friendships and the loyalty between Jonathan and his team, and I think even the bad guys are kind of, we hate them, but sort of understand them from their twisted point of view. And I think the idea is to always give the reader a sense of what's at stake, what can be lost, and then once they understand what's important to the characters, and then you put that in jeopardy, now you've got a reader that they want to find out. They want to find out about how the characters do.
And throughout the book, I think you also have moments there where you talk about the more, you know, the sort of seriousness of how we have to look at things and how we have to think about things, and that people, in a way, this book is a reminder to us all to be alert, to know that these things can happen, and to be aware of our surroundings. So I felt that also coming through the book.
Well, I mean, the reality is, you know, I don't write politics, I don't write nonfiction, I write fiction. But the fiction is based on the fears are real, the threat is real. Bad guys of all stripes are trying to hurt not just the United States as a whole, but individuals within the United States, and sort of randomly. That's the awfulness of terrorism. It's not like an assassination where you're targeting one person, which is bad enough, right? Trying one person to take them out. We're talking about people who like to set off bombs like they did in Kabul 2 days ago. And the idea is indiscriminate killing. And it's up to us. I mean, it's the citizens that have to either defend ourselves or be aware or call the police or, you know, do whatever it is. Complacency is a problem. However, you know, constantly being on red alert, it would be exhausting.
Exactly.
Right? So that's what the bad guys play off of. So it's a if you really get deep into this, and I do for the research, you got to be really careful that the paranoids don't come out and get you. You know, it's really sort of oppressive and depressing, the threats that are out there.
But in the end, this book is just an adventure, and it is one that really I think people will just enjoy so much. And I think you've just developed a wonderful, wonderful series here, and I think all of us will keep our fingers crossed about it appearing somewhere someday on one of these streaming things, because it's a wonderful group of people that you've developed, John. Now, again, repeat your website is
JohnGilstrap.com.
That's easy.
My YouTube channel is Author John Gilstrap, and my Facebook page is John Gilstrap Author. Yeah, I didn't think that through all that well.
I know.
Two different ones.
but it's there, and it's well worth it for all you people who are dreaming of writing. Definitely check out John's YouTube channel. It is very, very useful. And John, you're going to New York. Well, you're going to a convention in New York. Tell us a minute about that.
Okay, next week,
yeah.
I go to Thriller Fest, which is hosted by the International Thriller Writers Association, ITW, which awarded me a Best Book of the Year a few years ago. And this is the who's who of thriller writers. It's at the Grand Hyatt Hotel. You got to pay to attend, but you don't have to pay to hang out in the bar. So if you're going to New York, go to the Grand Hyatt sometime around happy hour, Friday or Saturday night of next week, whatever those dates are. And I mean, everybody who's anybody is there. Every author you can think of, every agent, editor, you know, the entire industry crams into the lobby bar.
I know.
Well, a lot of fun. And they're also the seminars during the day and panels and that kind of thing that that you can attend. But it's a great time. It's one of that and BoucherCon. Thriller Fest and BoucherCon are the two that I don't miss. And Magna Cum Murder is another one in Indiana in the fall that I love.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on today. And anybody who's going to be in New York, I wish I could be. I was just there, so I can't go back so soon. But I will see you at the next BoucherCon. And meanwhile, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. It's always a joy to talk to you. And everybody, get Total Mayhem. You will have a great, great read, and really enjoy it.
Listen to your host, people.
That's it. Listen to Patsy with a Z, because she knows
right.
A great book when she reads one. And a book that you can't put down. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye, John. Bye.
Bye.
Okie dokie. Okay, that's nice. He was at BoucherCon, and he is so sweet. And I was really, I managed to get a picture of him with my teddy bear, Pekka. And so it was really lots of fun to meet him at BoucherCon. Well, two wonderful books for you to read this weekend. Robert McCaw's book is Off the Grid, and John Gilstrap is Total Mayhem. Both of these books are really, they're just fun reads, and you will love them. I also want to remind everyone that, oh my goodness, I have David Baldacci coming back this month. He has a new book out, and so it's always exciting to talk to him. And I also go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com, and I will put up these interviews and a few others this weekend. It's been really hectic since I got back from New York, trying to get caught up on everything. You're away for a week and everything gets backlogged, but I'm trying to get caught up and get everybody's interviews up there. I want to make sure that I'm still trying to do Facebook every day. It's not easy because Facebook takes up so much time. But I'm also on Facebook, and it's Radio Joy on Paper. So you can go there, and I have links to some of these, to all of these books that I've been talking about. And you can click there on a link and find out more about the author. Go to their webpage and just enjoy these books because, you know, one of the wonderful things about it's going to be a long week. Everybody's taking off. I don't know. Most people seem to be taking off the entire week, but I don't know anybody who's actually going to work after 4th of July. Everybody's just, they all want to be off. So it's a wonderful weekend to read books, and I hope that you will do so. And I also want to tell you, if you have a chance, go to your local library and check out what they have there for you, what events they have during the summer. If you have children in your family, all of the local libraries are having absolutely wonderful summer reading programs. Our local library here, I was just looking at their webpage, they have programs for children. Also, Barnes & Noble are all summer long, they have events. Go to their website and check it out because they have wonderful events for children. I will be having a group of children here in the studio with me sometime in the end of the month. It's going to be fun. I've never had a whole bunch of kids in the studio, but I'm going to be part of a summer reading program, and the sort of the winners, the ones who either they write or they, you know, are really great at reviewing books, they're going to come here into the studio. So that's going to be a lot of fun for me. And I really look forward to that. But meanwhile, remember what I say all the time. One of the joys to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're really lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. And your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video, or perhaps a television series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, but you won't know unless you start writing. So you have to write a page a day. And if you write a page a day, at the end of the year, you're going to have a book. And it'll only take you another year or so to edit it. But anyway, you will have a book. And that's one of the joys of life. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. I love being saluted, and it's a very patriotic thing today, so to do this weekend. So make sure that you do it. Okay, bye-bye.